supposed to go to Disney World, and that is no longer happening for obvious reasons.
You could build your own Disney World in your backyard.
There it is. Yes. We can accomplish this. We can make this happen.
Right.
We have the cardboard. We can make this happen.
Like a laundry basket and a slide. That's all you really need.
Yeah. Splash Mountain. It's a slip and slide. Yeah.
Oh, goodness.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff. With me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
How are we doing, Patrick?
And Elise McCarter. How are you doing?
I'm good. How's it going?
Excellent.
Elise back for the third time.
That's right.
Third time
in a row. Our longest running guest co-host.
Yes.
It's a new Beyond Sunday record. I don't know. It seems.
Yeah, probably. I think two in a row was probably our longest running record. <That's fair. so.
laughs> Every week's a new record. There you go.
Shattering her own record here, yeah. So, as of recording, it's almost 4th of July. Big 4th of July plans?
Nope.
No.
Yeah. It's a COVID world, yeah.
I'm pretty grateful that I live in a community that pretty strictly has a lockdown on fireworks in general, so I have not been having to deal with this like outbreak of patriotic celebration over the past couple of weeks that I hear about all over the place. We have not had that, so I plan to keep it low key and, you know, cook something on the grill because that's how I celebrate America, and go from there
with meat.
Yeah, with I meat cooked on fire. That's, you know, America.
Meat.
Yeah, this is our yearly debate on our Nextdoor app over fireworks in our neighborhood.
Excellent.
So, it happens every year. The dog people hate the fireworks people, and vice versa.
Yep.
So, like, yep. They're two sides. They don't want to listen to the other one. So,
Elise, you have a big dog. How does Critter handle the fireworks?
Not well. Yeah. So my plans involve hunkering down with him. He has to be. Okay. In the bed with me, covered up with a blankie. He is, for reference, over 75 pounds and about 4 feet tall.
Big dog.
Yeah.
Yep. So almost as tall as me, but like super scrawny. I got it.
Yes. That's
right. look, we're all on our Corona diet,
that's
okay?
Right.
So that's right. Don't judge Critter for his Corona bod, all right?
Yes. Speaking of diets, here we go. I've got some news for us.
Look at that segue. It's like we've been doing this for almost 100 episodes.
did you know July is National Ice Cream Month?
What?
I did not, but I'm all for it. Yeah, let's celebrate.
Ice cream gets their own month here in July. Is it National Ice Cream Month?
Excellent.
Do you have a favorite flavor of ice cream?
Favorite flavor? Typically cookie dough, but sometimes I like a classic cookies and cream.
Okay. Elise?
Same with cookie dough.
Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite is going to be a mint chocolate chip. I do love mint chocolate chips. So. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
I said it's fine. Don't feel so judged, Patrick.
Okay. We'll see. Have you ever made your own ice cream?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Long time.
Multiple times. In fact, I have plans to make ice cream this weekend.
Oh, well, I've got the product for you, Pastor David.
I already have everything I need. I don't need another thing. What do you got?
Because our friends over at Heinz have launched their own line of ice cream kits.
If you tell me that this is like mustard-flavored ice cream, I'm walking off this podcast right now.
Not mustard, but ketchup or mayonnaise-flavored ice cream.
No.
I quit. This is worse than Cranch, Patrick. This is
that feels like the ice cream flavor of 2020. 2020 is mayonnaise ice cream.
It's mayonnaise-flavored ice cream. Yeah. There it is, yeah.
So last summer we talked about Heinz released a flavoring of combined condiments. Our favorite would have been Cranch. You want to take a stab at what you think that one is, Elise?
I'm sorry, favorite what?
combined condiments, Cranch was their Heinz's line of one of their combined.
So Cranch is
condiments.
A combination of two existing condiments. Which two condiments do you think that would be?
Oh, cranberry sauce and ranch.
It's ketchup and ranch.
Sauce
and ranch.
Sorry, I don't know why I went there.
Cranberry sauce and ranch has a possibility of being tasty. Uh-huh, like the cranberry ranch could do a thing.
I feel like it shows up in a Jell-O salad somewhere. Somebody's done it.
Yeah, that's some Lutheran potluck for sure.
Right.
Yeah. So, don't worry too if you're vegan. This is can also be made not just as ice cream, but also as a sorbet.
Oh, good.
So,
that was great. Yep.
You can get out on this. Maybe not the mayonnaise one because I think that has eggs in it. So the ketchup ice cream, they say is best tops in their kit. A kit to make your own. You don't just buy this at the store. You make it in your own home. You add these ingredients together. It's topped with a swirl of raspberry coulis.
Oh, I'm so is that nervous. How I'm pronouncing
that right? Yeah, you are pronouncing that correct, but that should not go on top of ketchup.
No.
And a squeeze of ketchup just right on top.
Gross. Oh, God.
I can't.
Let me get the mayonnaise one here. The mayonnaise one is topped with an apple and blackberry compote and a layer of crumble. You know, doesn't sound just delicious. You want to just
apple mayonnaise. That's definitely what I'm thinking. I've always wanted. Yep.
And yes.
Is it too late for us to ask for forgiveness on behalf of the Heinz Corporation?
I know.
Do we have that authority? Can we?
maybe yes. God is punishing us for Heinz. He heard about this product. He's like, 2020 is just not going to go well.
I feel wrong inside.
I do. If you eat this, you will definitely feel wrong inside.
There's also one, a Heinz salad cream. What is that even? That's one of their flavors.
This is getting worse.
Topped with strawberries.
Why are we still talking about this?
I don't know.
And no. a barbecue one, too. A barbecue ice cream with their barbecue sauce, maple syrup, pecans, and a sprinkling of bacon bits.
All right, barbecue ice cream has potential, not from the Heinz Corporation, but just as like a flavor, like a smokier sweet ice cream with like a sweet pecan, that's got some potential. That's
does
got
it some though? I don't know.
That's the kind and of thing finally, that would come out on like Iron Chef. That's a thing. That
probably.
Would happen.
And everybody would hate it.
And finally, I know, Pastor David, you love the combined condiments here.
I don't.
So
that's not true.
The last one is the Heinz.
Rumors.
The Heinz saucy sauce. That's what it's called.
Okay.
It's the, according to the description, the perfect flavor blend of ketchup and mayonnaise in one delicious bottle. So there you go, the Heinz saucy sauce. It's best served topped with peanuts and a Thai sweet chili sauce. There you go, right on top of that ice cream.
No, hard pass on all of these things.
Which of those do you think sounds the best?
None
which
of them.
You had to eat one.
I've already established the barbecue. Yeah. If I had to eat one, it would be the barbecue.
Being vegan sounds pretty good right now.
No, they've got the vegan option. You're not getting off that.
Sorbet.
Oh, sorbet.
Yeah,
I forgot.
Sorbet. I think I would have to go with maybe the mayonnaise one just for the apple and blackberry compote. I think hopefully that would overpower the taste of mayonnaise. That's what I'm hoping for.
I mean, apple blackberry compote does sound delicious.
Exactly. I think that sounds
I'll
really
eat
good,
that.
So.
Yeah. I am planning to make my own ice cream this weekend. None of those flavors will be on the menu. Just to...
Look, I will send you a package of one of these things. It's Heinz things. I'll send it to your daughter, Sophia. I'll address it to her so she can open it up and long to make this.
I will decline to accept that package and we'll send it back.
All right, well, moving on to our main story this evening. Well, by this evening, I don't know. It's afternoon when we're recording.
It's Corona time. Who knows what's happening?
Yeah. We are continuing our monthly series on books of the Bible. So last month we talked about Genesis. This month we're going to talk about the next book, Exodus.
Seems like a logical progression. I like it.
Yes. So I do have a little fun fact.
I love that.
I think, except for the time where you go from Old Testament to New Testament, this is the largest leap in time from one book to the next in the Bible. So we go from Genesis to Exodus. It's about 400 years or so. You know, we're kind of unsure. Leap in time from one book to the next. Some of the narrative books, you know, kind of take place back to back to back. So this is Pastor David's doing math here.
No, I'm thinking through that. I'm with you. Yeah. Outside of like, because there are some of the narrative books that kind of take place like outside of chronological time. So I wouldn't count that. That seems like unfair. But yeah, that's a good point.
This in the story of Israel, this is the largest leap. Yeah, we miss. So in Genesis, it ends with Joseph, kind of our last hero of Genesis, taking his family out from wherever they're living into Egypt to avoid a drought. That's how the story ends. And then 400 years now in the future, Joseph's offspring, family and their offspring and offspring and offspring, they are now slaves in Egypt. So we leap forward in time. We miss all that, how that happened, how that came to be, we're unsure of. But here we are. So they are slaves in Egypt. All right. So Exodus is a book kind of like Genesis. It's going to be divided into two parts, two halves. The first half is going to kind of follow a more narrative structure, a more story structure. And the second half is going to be a lot more... Here's a lot of rules and lists on what it's going to look like for this newly formed tribe of Israel to start forming their own country and what that's going to look like. What are the governing laws and principles? And that's kind of the back half. And kind of right in the middle, the dividing line, you could say, is kind of like the Ten Commandments, kind of forms that dividing line. So the Ten Commandments, and that opens up to, here's the 10 big ones and a bunch of little ones, you know. And then the next couple books of the Bible will kind of explore a lot of those little ones even further. Mm-hmm. All right, so this is Exodus. So let's talk about this first half. Is there anything you remember? This is, I think also, in the Old Testament at least, this is probably the story that is most represented on film is the Exodus story.
Yeah. Yeah, that's
so have you seen... Yeah, I'm a huge fan of Prince of Egypt, the animated DreamWorks one. I think it's really, really good. It's got a great soundtrack and good voice acting. I think it's one of the best non-Disney animated movies.
Ooh,
so.
All right. I would say that's high praise, but you categorized it as not Disney. Right. So automatically we're looking at a lower bar here.
Disney is the gold standard of animated
movies.
Absolutely.
I make no argument with that.
I'd say I'd put it up there with, for me, you know... How to Train Your Dragon and maybe Kung Fu Panda is the best of the non-Disney.
Which are all also DreamWorks, right?
All DreamWorks,
there
you
go.
And then I guess Studio Ghibli, that's the Japanimation ones are really good too. But
I know nothing
those are
about
a little less mainstream. So let's get into Exodus here. Though.
Right, because that's what we're here to talk about, not animation.
Sidebar.
So in Exodus, we have a central figure that's different than Genesis. Genesis, we have a bunch of different characters we follow for a bit. Exodus, we have one kind of central figure. Moses is kind of going to be our kind of key person that we will follow his life throughout the book of Exodus. And in our story about Genesis, we talked about Abraham being on kind of like the Mount Rushmore of the Old Testament. Moses is the second member of the Mount Rushmore of the Old Testament.
Yep.
He's a key figure, really important. He's got a lot going on.
Seems
Moses.
Like he would probably be the Abraham Lincoln of the Mount Rushmore, since he sets free the slaves.
Sure.
That seems appropriate, right?
I think that's appropriate. Yeah. I like that. Abraham Lincoln.
Maybe too obvious, but still, it seems to work.
Sure. Yeah. Or I was thinking maybe even the Thomas Jefferson, since like he's kind of, you know, if Abraham's the George Washington, the first founder, Moses is kind of the establisher of the nation.
Okay.
You know, so.
I like that theory too. Both work. Either way.
So let's get into like a description of like what are the major plot points here in the first half of the book of Exodus. I'll turn it over to you guys. So tell me the major plot points of the first half of the book of Exodus.
Yeah, so I think the first major thing that we have to see, and you kind of alluded to this already, is that the book starts with this recognition that a new pharaoh came up who did not know Joseph. And so the context starts in saying, look, we had this thing that was pretty good at the end of Genesis where everything was going to be okay. But now there's a leader who doesn't know this old story, doesn't know why these people are here, and doesn't know what this ancestor of these people did to save all of Egypt, not just his own family, but to save all of Egypt. And so now the context becomes, hey, there are these foreigners, these Hebrews, which literally just means someone who's not an Egyptian, right? There are these Hebrews who are more numerous than us, and if they figure that out, they're going to overthrow us, so we should enslave them. Like that's the beginning of the book of Exodus. And I think that's important for us to understand, is that there's this ruling power who says, hey, there's this class of people who are not from here, and to make sure that they don't harm us or they don't take our power, we should definitely oppress them and make them work for us. And then we get these people who are in slavery who cry out to God. That's where the whole thing starts for us.
So Moses's mother puts him in a basket because Pharaoh issues a decree to kill the Israeli sons, if I'm not mistaken. I don't mm-hmm. know if there's an
yep.
extra qualifying factor to that, whether it's firstborn or youngest or within a certain
all
age
the
range.
Boys.
Okay, all the boys.
Yep.
So I think the method for doing that was throwing the babies into the Nile River. And so Moses' mother does put Moses in the river, but she puts him in a reed basket to save him from Pharaoh's soldiers. And then Pharaoh's daughter actually finds the baby in the basket that is Moses and raises him as her own. So Moses grows up in the palace.
Yeah. And then...
And conveniently...
Oh, no, sorry, God.
And Moses' mother is also going to be his wet nurse.
Right.
That through some chicanery from his sister, his older sister, she gets his mom in there to be the wet nurse for Moses. So Moses is raised kind of in between worlds. The Egyptian world and the Israelite world. he's got a foot in both worlds. A joke that my wife has made, so this is credit to her, so that I think it's funny, is saying, like, now that she had a baby, she completely understands wanting to put it in a basket and letting it float down the river.
It's so genius.
So she gets yeah. it. Like, the story rings true. Yeah. Like, oh, gosh.
Yeah, it fits the pattern. We get that.
Yeah. All right, so and then Pastor David.
And then Moses grows up, and he's raised in Pharaoh's household. He has not all the authority of a member of Pharaoh's household, but he's raised alongside of his kind of half-brother thing that's actually one of Pharaoh's children who's going to ascend to the throne. And he's out in the camps one day, and he sees an Egyptian guard abusing one of these slaves, and he steps in to try to protect the slave and ends up killing the Egyptian guard. And then runs away because he realizes that he's now committed a crime and the Pharaoh is going to probably kill him because of it. And so he runs off into the wilderness.
Yes, where he, I guess, connects with what would become his father-in-law, mm-hmm. his wife. They get married in the wilderness. He lives there for a long time, just kind of being a shepherd of sheep.
Good old Jethro.
Until he sees, good old Jethro. Which seems like a weird biblical name, right? Because you feel like
Jethro Tull. Jethro. Is that what you're thinking about?
Yeah, it's like a some guy from like West Virginia.
Yeah, Appalachia.
Jethro.
Yeah, you go ahead and throw out your West Virginia hate there, Patrick. That's really.
I'm not hating. I'm just saying like that's what it seems like. It's more of like a country guy, Jethro.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, this guy was living in the country. He wasn't in the big, you know.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
So it was the country of the ancient world.
Of West Egypt, so close enough. And there he sees, while out, a burning bush. Then he goes in there, takes off his shoes. God speaks to Moses through the burning bush.
Yeah.
Tells him, Moses, let my people go, kind of a thing. Like the Charlton Heston movie.
Like the song.
Like the song. Go back, tell Pharaoh, give me the people. Moses makes a bunch of excuses, and God says, you're going to do just fine. Yeah. Quit stopping.
You're going to do it anyway.
Get your brother. Get a stick. Turn into a snake. You got it. So, Moses goes back to meet with Pharaoh, his long-lost half-brother, and to form this this confrontation over the Israelite slaves. Where do we go next?
Yeah, so then Moses comes back and has some trouble, but eventually convinces the people that he should do this on their behalf and goes to Pharaoh. And we get into this whole battle between Pharaoh and God, if you want to think of it that way, where Pharaoh's sorcerers try to conjure up a thing, and then God demonstrates this even more powerful thing, and this all leads us into the plagues and the kind of famous 10 plagues of Egypt, where God brings these plagues across the land. You've got locusts, you've got gnats, you've got blood in the water, you've got some other things, and then eventually you have the plague.
It's basically 2020.
Yeah, it's our current year.
Sounds familiar.
About things that have happened this year. Yeah, you know it. We know this story.
It's Heinz ketchup ice cream one.
That's right. Yes, it is. The whole Nile turns to Heinz ketchup ice cream. And so then this all culminates in the final plague, the death of the firstborn. And this leads us into the story of the Passover, where the Israelites are ultimately rescued through this story. They're spared because of this Passover process, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit, so I won't go too detailed into that. But they're spared, and they're finally told by Pharaoh, you go, just get out of here, and they go.
Next part of the story is they go, and then God hardens Pharaoh's heart. So I think we were talking about this earlier. It alludes to Pharaoh hardened his own heart during the plagues, but then God actually hardens Pharaoh's heart after the Israelites have left, and then he follows them. They pass through the Red Sea, I believe. Mm-hmm. God parts the waters, and the army, the Egyptian army, follows and gets buried at the bottom of the Red Sea.
Yeah, so this is amazing. This is an incredible narrative. The first half of Exodus, I think, is action-packed. It's fun. It's cool. It's brisk. It's a really cool story. I think there's a reason that Hollywood has picked up on this narrative and made it multiple times into different movies is because it's a cool story.
Yeah. And that was just like the first 14 chapters. Like that, it's just getting going.
It is a really interesting story. That's typically what most of the movies will focus in on, is that part of the story. Yep. Maybe they'll go to the mountain to get the Ten Commandments and they kind of stop after that. Because then, like I said, the back half of the book, the narrative kind of shifts. It's no longer a story told as a story. It's kind of more told as kind of like, you're all of a sudden reading is Israel's like Bill of Rights. And so it just becomes a little different.
And a lot longer than the Bill of Rights.
But what's interesting about Exodus is like right after that part. So they get across, Moses and Miriam, his sister, sing a song. It's really beautiful. I think it's the first time we really have like a song in the Bible. So I think it's really cool. And then the Israelites almost instantaneously are like, so where's the food?
Yep.
What do we got? What's the plan? What are we going to do? Why are we here? I don't like the desert. Maybe we should just go back. Like, within seconds of leaving slavery, they're like, maybe slavery wasn't that bad.
Yeah.
Like,
yep. You know,
this is pretty tough. Like, almost immediately. And so I think as a reader, like, you have these kind of two interesting questions for me that I'm kind of picking up. And we're going to pause here and kind of talk a little bit more, and then maybe we'll get into the back half towards the end of, like, one, a really hard question for me is the hardening of Pharaoh's heart. What does that mean when God comes in and forces Pharaoh's hand? At least that's what it sounds like. Mm-hmm. So he hardens. And then the second part is Israel really worth saving? Because they're spoiled almost, again, immediately. They're acting like babies. They're also hardening their own hearts just as the Egyptians did. And maybe in a different way, but they're doing kind of the same type of thing. All right, so maybe you want to take a stab at some of these questions to start to think about. So, like, what does it mean? Let's look at the first one. When God hardens Pharaoh's heart, what does that look like?
Well, this is not the only place in Scripture where we hear God is using foreign powers and foreign rulers to achieve mm-hmm. God's ends, right? I mean, we hear about this during the exile, that God is going to lift up this foreign leader. I think Cyrus of Persia is the one who's ultimately going to destroy Babylon, and Babylon before that is going to be the one to take Israel out of their land. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we see throughout Scripture God is at work throughout the world, right? God is not just the God of Israel. God is the God of the world. God has just chosen Israel to be a unique people. And so I don't think it's out of context for God to be working through Pharaoh and to be even forcing Pharaoh's hand in this way, that Pharaoh's entire army is going to be led into the Red Sea in order to demonstrate God's power, both to God's people and to the Egyptians, right? That God is demonstrating this power that God has. I think it feels icky by our modern standards, because we're like, oh, why would God want to drown all these people in order just to, you know, show off God's power? Couldn't God have done something else? Well, maybe, but we're also thinking about this in our pretty limited understanding of God's overall plan, right? Even as we look back, knowing the entire story, knowing the story that leads ultimately to Jesus and to the resurrection and to the redemption of all creation, even knowing that, we're still getting a very small sliver of the pie. And so it's a place for me where I'm willing to just say, I don't fully understand the mind of God. And I know, yeah. And I know that I'm not going to, and I can see, okay, God hardened Pharaoh's heart. And for me, that's a difficult thing to understand, but also I don't need to fully understand the mind of God in order to just see the demonstration of God's ability to rescue God's people. Because the ultimate story leads to where we're told, right, all of us are God's people. And so God is willing to do that for all of us. It's not separating us from the Egyptians. It's us from that, you know, the death and the sin that is that is enslaving us, if you will.
Yeah. Elise, any thoughts on this?
Well, not so much on God hardening Pharaoh's heart. I think David covered it pretty well. But I've been thinking, I was just sitting here thinking more about how they got whiny and hangry as soon as they got out into the wilderness. And first of all, I think that's just such human nature. I wrote a brief devotional for the church earlier on this year about wilderness and the story structure of Exodus. One thing to me, like as I've gotten older, I've reframed the wilderness experience in Exodus from a consequence to the point of the narrative. And I think mm-hmm. so frequently it's the point of our narratives as well. We all experience spiritual wilderness to some degree, you know, but I think that the growth always occurs in discomfort, in wilderness, and seeking, and I think that that's what God was setting Israel up for, ultimately.
Yeah. Yeah, because Israel, if you're familiar or not with this story, Israel's going to spend a lot of time in the wilderness. This is not just a quick jaunt over to the promised land, and then things get settled and they go, all right. We're going to spend some time out there in the deserts roaming. And they're not going to just roam in a straight line from Egypt to promised land. It's going to be a winding road. They're going to make the promised land. They're going to come back into the wilderness. One generation will die, and the next generation will go on and continue the story. So, I mean, this is a lot of time is going to be spent on this journey from slavery to kingdom. And so that is an interesting part of, like, that's part of the process. It's not the destination, it's the journey, right? So it's like, that's part of the growth is happening there in that wilderness. So I do want to think of, like, all right, so what parts, let's maybe talk briefly about the back half, and then we'll come back to the whole of Exodus.
Yeah.
So Moses is going to go up the mountain. God's going to give him 10 commandments. While that's happening, Pastor David, I know you had like a highlight here that you really liked.
Oh, I do.
Before Moses goes up the mountain.
Well, I love this part. So I think we skip over this part more often than not. And it's one of those things where, like, I've probably read it a dozen times. And then within the last year or so, I was like, oh, man, look at this thing that we should really be paying more attention to than we do. And what we see is that God, this is in chapter 20. In chapter 20, God gathers all the people around the mountain. They're at the Mount Sinai at this point, and God gathers all the people around and says, hey, Moses, you're going to set limits. Like, don't let the people go past here, but as long as they come up just to here, I'm going to speak directly to the people. This is God's plan, and that's actually how God gives the Ten Commandments. At the beginning of chapter 20, God is speaking directly to the people, and then immediately after the Ten Commandments, all the people witnessed this thunder and lightning that's happening up on the mountain as they're experiencing God. Thunder, lightning, the sound of the trumpet. This is verse 18 of chapter 20. And the mountain was smoking, and they were afraid and trembled and stood at a distance and said to Moses, you speak to us, and we will listen, but do not let God speak to us, or we will die. And Moses said to the people, do not be afraid, for God has come only to test you and put fear of him upon you so that you do not sin. Then the people stood at a distance while Moses drew near to the thick darkness where God was. I think it's this beautiful reminder that God's intention is to speak directly to the people, that the people get to experience God's power and God's desire to save and God's love for humanity. They get to experience that face on, and that causes fear, but fear in the way that causes us to live in accord with what is asked of us. And the people immediately say, we don't want any of that. We want to speak to someone that we don't have to be afraid of. We're not afraid of Moses. Moses, you go up and speak to this God that's big and scary, and then come down and tell us what to do. And we'll probably do it, probably not. But you know, we're going to talk to you, Moses, and you talk to God. And so immediately the people have been brought out of Egypt, you know, just like we said with the bread, right? They've been brought out. They've seen this pillar of fire and pillar of smoke that's been leading them through the wilderness. They've seen the Red Sea split and take out the entire Egyptian army. They've seen a bread come down from heaven. They've seen water come out of a rock so that they can drink. And still they're like, no, we don't want any part of this God. We don't trust this God. And I think it's almost like there's a syndrome, and I can't remember what it is, for people who have been in captivity for a long time. It's not Stockholm syndrome, because that's the one where you fall in love with your captor. It's not that one. But it's the other one where you come out of captivity and you don't know how to trust again. You see this in like abused animals and stuff like that, right? Where you've been abused and beaten for so long that even when someone's trying to love you, you interpret it as something to be afraid of. And I feel like that's what the entire nation of Israel is doing here. And I think that we come to God in that way so often in our own lives and don't realize it, that we come thinking and expecting a violent God who wants to beat us up and hurt us for all of our sins, when in fact God is not intending to be scary. God is intending to demonstrate power and love to save us from all that of which we're afraid. And so I just love that story.
Yeah.
And I think we skip over that a lot because it's right after the Ten Commandments. We're like, oh, Ten Commandments, and then we stop. We're like, no, wait, there's more. You got to read the next couple verses.
No, I think that was great. I think that was really neat for us to hear. Because probably the story most familiar around that time is there's an idol that the Israelites make, this cow made out of the gold that Aaron makes, and Moses gets mad, and he burns it all up, and he makes them drink it, and he goes back up the mountain to go talk to God again.
Mm-hmm.
And God at that point is like, forget these people. Like, I'm done. Yeah. Moses, me and you, let's go start our own nation. We're done with them.
Yep.
And Moses convinces God, or at least, you know, the narrative sounds like Moses convinces God to say, like, hey, you chose these people. You can't turn your back on them. What would the other nations say? What would, you know, kind of like, what are the other gods or what are the other nations going to say about you if you draw these people out of slavery and then just, like, leave them to die? You kind of, you know, you've made a commitment to them. You've got to follow through with a God, as stubborn as they are.
Yep.
For your own sake.
Yep.
Even. And then we kind of get into those rules. So then that's kind of the back half of Exodus. Not to say there's no more narrative. I think there's a few more stories that kind of pepper that, but it really is kind of like, and here's rules about blank, and here's rules about blank, and here's rules about blank. And so it's just a lot of that. So any thoughts on that back half of Exodus, of why we have a long time spent on the laws, rules, and customs of Israel that we're kind of setting in motion?
Well, I think I just watched the Bible Project video on Exodus to brush up on this, and I think...
Oh, good choice.
If I remember correctly, what they said in that video was that God was setting up Israel to be a nation of priesthood, as a representative of him to the rest of the world. And so these were all things that set them apart.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, I think that's really... cool way to look at it. Yeah,
yeah. I think the nation of priests, I mean, Martin Luther will pick up this as well, this kind of priesthood of all believers, that it's God's intention from the beginning. It's not that you have like one priest. Mm-hmm. God didn't want just Moses. God wanted all the people to come and talk at the mountain. But I think it's also this idea of, we often interpret these laws as like this burden that's being thrust down on the people. Mm-hmm. When in fact, if you imagine being someone who had been enslaved, and now you're suddenly supposed to form a nation, there's a gift in having the sense of, here's what you're supposed to do, right? You don't have to figure it out for yourself. Here's the way you're supposed to live with one another. Here's what a godly or a nation that represents God is supposed to look like. And so this law is given as a gift for the people, and then the people turn it into a burden, and the people, right, turn it into a curse for ourselves.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think that gives us a good picture of Exodus. Before we shut down, I want to say, like, is there anything that we missed or anything that stands out to you that you're like, I really want to highlight this, whether that's a favorite part or a highlight of the narrative that you really kind of want to kind of uplift here? I've got one.
Yeah, go ahead.
But I'll see if one of you guys want to go first. So for me, it is actually the Passover. We kind of touched on that earlier, but I think the Passover is incredible. So this would be the 10th and final plague of Egypt. Moses is saying, I'm going to release the destroyer on Egypt. It's this really scary thing that's going to come through. It's going to kill the firstborn of everyone. But here's what Israel is going to do. They're going to take a lamb, they're going to sacrifice it, and they're going to put the blood on their doorway as kind of a sign. It even says, like, when the destroyer sees the blood, it will move on. And that's a really powerful thing. And Passover becomes a major holiday for the Israelite community to today. And it's something that Jesus is celebrating right before his death. So when we talk about the Last Supper, he's celebrating Passover. So when we do communion in church, this is an offshoot of this first holiday of Passover. So that's what we are celebrating, a sense, a mini Passover in that time. So what I think is most fascinating about this, that I really find so intriguing, is that, like, although Israel, from our perspective, are the good guys, right? Like, they're the people we're following. They're God's people. They've been the people since Abraham. They're not saved from death by being the good guys. They're not saved by being God's favorites. They're not saved by being the victims or the people who are bullied. They're only saved by the blood of the lamb. That's it. And I think that, for me, that's such a quality reminder that when, like, that's what it's supposed to look like, right? Like, God's not looking at humanity and being and dividing us into, like, good guys and bad guys or bullied and victim. That's not the defining factors. It's kind of like how the blood of our future lamb, Jesus, is protecting us from those things. It's covering over us. I think it's such a powerful thing for me of, like, God does not like me because I'm good. God's on my side because of Jesus. And I think that's a powerful thing. Like, so it also is a humbling thing of saying, like, Israel, again, immediately after being freed, they come into being whiners and complainers. They want to go back. They're really not that good at guys. Like, they're kind of They're kind of petulant. They're kind of, as Elisa kind of mentioned, maybe they're just really human. And that's okay for them to not be superhuman. They're just kind of like everybody. And so the reason God has committed to them is because God has chosen them and because of the blood of the Lamb, not because of them themselves. And I think that's a powerful thing. Any other highlights we want to think about from the book of Exodus?
He actually took mine. I was just going to point out the strong foreshadowing of the Passover to Jesus' death and resurrection later on.
Sorry.
That's okay.
Way to go, Pat.
Yeah. You did it well, so it's cool.
Yeah. I think we covered it. I kind of talked about some of my favorites. I do really love the Israelites complaining. I just think that's just so emblematic of us. And, you know, let us go back to Egypt, right? Let us go back to this place where literally we were slaves and we were crying out for relief just weeks earlier. Let us go back there because that's safer than this unknown world in which we're being called to trust an unknown God.
Yeah. There were periods where Pharaoh was killing our babies.
Yep.
And let's go back.
Let's do that.
Yep. It's just preferable. Yeah, I think, last thing I want to say, I saw this like on Facebook, I guess, or on Instagram. Somebody posted this, you know, a meme, like they do. And it said, like, all of us sometimes read the Bible with like this Disney princess way to read the Bible.
Yeah.
Thing. And that means like when we read the Bible, oftentimes we're placing ourselves in the characters that we read about, and we're almost entirely placing ourselves in the good guy characters. We're the Israelites, not the Egyptians.
Obviously.
We're like Moses, not like Pharaoh.
Come on. But in reality,
we need to sometimes not do that, because that's not how the Bible is supposed to be. And two, sometimes take acknowledgement of like, there are times where I am like Egypt, where I am okay with the exploitation of others if it leads me to the life that I live right now. I'm okay that like, and even though I'm not, my lifestyle suggests I am okay, right? I'm okay that sometimes kids out there built things that I own because I bought them.
Yeah.
And sometimes I'm like Moses, I'm like Pharaoh, where I harden my heart to the visions and dreams of God, and especially to the compassion of God for others. And so it's okay to say, I'm not always the good guy. When I read scripture, I'm not always in the place of Moses. There are times I kind of resemble Egypt, and kind of the church and my country kind of sometimes does too.
Yeah.
Again, not always. It's not a complete narrative, but the story of Exodus is not just about how can we be freed. Sometimes the story of Exodus, well, how can I make sure we're freeing others? That I'm not a person of subjugation. So I think that's part of that story, how I want to take that the beautiful story of Exodus into the modern culture and times right now. Both those things I need to be highlighted.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, so I think that gives us a good place to end. So Pastor David, where can you find
me? Yeah, hey, if you liked what you heard as we talked about Exodus today, you can, of course...
I did like it.
Okay, so yeah. Patrick and anybody else out there who liked what they heard, you, of course, can find us on iTunes, Google Play, all the places where fine podcasts are available for your quarantining consumption. And, of course, you can find us on our website, www.beyondsundaypodcast.com. And we'd love to hear some feedback. You know, we've had a couple of great episodes around conversations around race recently. We're trying this new Bible series once a month. We want to know what you as listeners are thinking and engaging, and what's helpful and what's not. We want this to continue to be meaningful, so please reach out to us on our Facebook page, at our email address, beyondsundaypodcast@gmail.com. All those places, just get in touch with us, let us know what's helpful and what's not, so that we can continue to make this a meaningful journey as we all continue to take our faith beyond Sunday. See what I did there?
Boom. Yeah, that's a good job.
Brought it back around.
Good sting right at the end there.
Yeah. Excellent.
All right. Thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week.